are getting heavy. Come on, settle down. Lean back and unwind, 'cause we're getting tuckered out.
It's recording.
Toot toot. What's that? Pulling into the Tuckered Out station. You ready to get on this train and ride?
Sure. What stop are we ending up at?
Yeah.
You trying to think of a joke?
Yeah. You caught me. I didn't load anything in the barrel there after I started the train analogy.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well?
My bad. Do you want to do the intro this week, since roles reversed? I haven't asked that in the past. That might be fun.
Welcome to ADD Storytelling, a neurodivergent podcast in which we explore the myth legends of our time, past, present, and the future, in no particular order and with less than perfect focus. My name is Maddie. I'm the usual host. But today, Tucker is hosting a Tuckered Out episode.
That's me. I'm Tucker. You're in my court now. Sorry. Got to get the jitters out.
Okay,
I got a lot
of
jitters today.
What are we doing? What are we talking about? You've kept it such a secret. I actually have no idea.
Super, super duper secret. I mean, I don't know why. Well, no, you prefer it that way sometimes.
That's how it is.
It is.
That's how it is right now.
No, this week we're talking biblically accurate angels.
We're talking about biblically accurate angels.
Yes. So the way angels are truly meant to be described and seen, as opposed to that bullshit that floods the images of our current world. The classic, large, beautifully white-skinned man in a robe with wings. None of that here. None of that today. We're getting psychedelic, we're getting weird, and we're getting kind of body horror-y with some of them at times.
Okay, just diving. Is it angels and demons, or just angels?
Oh, just angels.
Interesting.
I'm a good, good boy. Only talking about the beneficent, the divine. So, shall we begin?
Let's do it. I want to feel angelic.
Do you?
Yes.
You have very cherub-like qualities today.
I do not.
I will harness that and use it to lift me up on high on thy beautiful kaleidoscopic wing.
Okay.
All right. Let us begin with an overview of a man that will play a recurring and somewhat integral role in our story today, the prophet Ezekiel. Now tell me, Maddie, as we have covered numerous times in the course of this podcast, as you are a student of, dare I say, God, raised in the Catholic faith, what do you, off the top of your head, know about the prophet Ezekiel? Or probably better to ask, what do you remember of the prophet Ezekiel?
Doesn't he have a book?
Sure do have a book.
In the Bible?
Yeah, huh?
That's all I got.
That's what you got.
A lot of the books have that. One of them is, Ezekiel 23 or whatever, like Genesis, but one's Ezekiel.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
That's it?
Yep. Didn't spend a lot of time on it, Catholic school.
I know that there's a skate brand called Ezekiel.
Well, it's also like a pretty common name.
Yeah, a lot of Ezekiels.
I mean, I feel like biblical names are in general pretty common.
Yeah, but like Joshua and Michael or Adam. How many Ezekiels do you know? I'm sorry, I'm putting you on blast for your Zeke knowledge here.
I feel like I know more Zeke's than Ezekiel.
Really?
But I don't know.
Any hoodle. So yeah, he had a bunch of visions that are related to us in the Greek and Hebrew. Oh, they're in all of the Bibles, but today we're really stemming a lot of our references from the Greek and Hebrew ones. Acknowledged and remembered as a prophet in the Christian, Jewish, and Islamic faiths, Ezekiel is the main character of the book bearing his name from the 6th century BCE, though only ascribed as the author by Jewish and Christian believers. So in the
he's in the Torah and the Bible.
Yeah, and the Talmud. He's not considered the author of the Book of Ezekiel in Islamic. The Book of Ezekiel tells the tale of the prophet's numerous visions, notably the destruction of Jerusalem and the reclaiming of the land of Israel. among these.
That sounds a little familiar.
Yeah.
Got nothing else.
Nothing else.
Just some recognition. A noise of recognition.
Oh, like it's pinging a memory slot for you.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Load that save data. You got it.
I don't know if I have it. Try to bury it down there.
Yeah. That's kind of what the takeaway from Catholic school is, a bunch of repressed memories that are buried deep down inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Among these visions, we find the vivid, psychedelic, and often kaleidoscopic descriptions of the heavenly entities, which we will be discussing today. According to the author Ronald Ernest Clements in his book, Ezekiel, the vision wizard in question's visions began in the year 593 BCE at the prophet's 30th year and lasted 22 years until 571 BCE.
Hey, I only got 6 months until I'm a prophet.
Yeah?
Turning
because
30.
You'll be turning 30?
Yeah.
That's the prophet age. I'm pretty sure Jesus was in the 27 club. Didn't he die like mid late 20s?
Then we have no idea.
Yeah, someone's got an idea.
No clue. You know.
Yes?
I really only need two more miracles to be a Catholic saint.
Do you have a few under your belt?
You only need three. I've done one.
What was your one?
I've survived COVID and teaching. That's me. I'm still going to be a teacher next year. After teaching throughout COVID for 2 years. So that's a miracle.
I feel like your first miracle is landing this hot piece of ass, but you know.
Talking about you?
Yeah.
That was
a
miracle?
Yeah. Didn't think anyone could do it.
Divine intervention?
You pulled off the miraculous.
For you or for me? That's the question.
Indeed it is. So let's start with our first type of angel. The cherubim.
A cherubim?
The cherubim. Commonly shortened to the more popular cherub, the cherubim are sometimes designated as the fourth lowest ranked angel within the divine caste system, while also being listed in the number 9 slot if one is going off of Maimonides' set of 10 angels in the Mishneh Torah, just above the stinky, lowly, human-looking Ishim. Now, we'll be coming back to this ranking system a lot, and I'm going to just get out ahead and say that there doesn't seem to be really any solid consensus of the ranking, nor do they have a consistent number of angels within said system. We're going to mainly be using Maimonides' angelic ranking system, as I said, from the Mishneh Torah today, just because I like Maimonides the best of all the philosophers and theologists I researched.
Do you have just the list, like if we're going off of his ranking, do you just have it there and you can read it down real quick?
I sure do. I had it at the ready because I figured you might want that. Do you want me to start?
How many ranks are there first?
There's 10.
10 ranks, yes. Right. 1 through 10.
Would you like there? All right. So like I just said, the Ishim are number 10. And those are man-like beings. Or being the most frequently mentioned heavenly attendant in the Hebrew Bible, it stands to reason that the cherub would be the most widely recognizable of the players that we will be discussing today. Well, just at least when it comes to those that don't look like just men with bird wings. Because these are babies with bird wings. You see them all over the place. Widely imagined and portrayed as human-animal hybrids, being small, plump boys with the small, soft wings of doves, you and I both know these vicious creatures by their normie name, Cupid. Right? Cupid or cherub? Either or. They're both pretty synonymous with it, right?
I'm pretty sure most people think of Cupid as being like the Valentine's Day thing,
totally.
But also as the Greek demigod, who's Aphrodite's son.
Yeah, and I was starting to read a whole story about Cupid and Psyche.
I don't know if Cupid is like Roman or Greek name, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to like include something from the story in Bullfinch's mythology of Cupid and Psyche, but it didn't really pertain, and it really kind of derailed. It is. It's a bit of a bummer. I was reading that one, and I was just like, a lot of girl hate.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling it. Venus was really fucking up there. Anywho, entomologically speaking, and I will say, there's going to be a lot of entomologically speaking like rabbit holes today. Hope you're excited. According to footnotes I found in the Talmud, the Hebrew word for cherub is explained as being composed of the character roughly symbolic of F in the English language, which means like in Hebrew, and once again, roughly synonymous in English with cur, meaning, quote, a growing boy. So cherub means like a growing boy.
How fun
is that? Listen, I'm observing you learn in real time, and you just look absolutely... I wish we had this one being filmed, because Maddie is ecstatic and glowing right now. With such joy. This is edutainment at its finest.
If we were filming it, it would be literally impossible for me to edit.
Yeah. These unimposing sky lads were given weighty responsibility in the antediluvian era. As it says in Genesis 3, I'll give you all a moment to open your Bibles. There you go. So he, being the Hebrew Old Testament God in this instance, drove the man out, and at the east of the Garden of Eden, he stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword, which turned in every direction to guard the way to the tree of life.
Oh, I'm wondering, so in Good Omens, they
had... Yeah, I knew you were going to take it here.
They had a... The cute one, hold the sword, that owns the bookshop. What's his name in there?
Azraphale.
Azraphale, right. So they had Azraphale hold the golden sword, and then he gave it to Adam and Eve because they looked really cold, so they gave him fire.
Yeah, so he was an angel entrusted to wield the flaming sword, guides one to the Garden of Eden.
Azraphale was?
Yes, but then he gave it away.
Right, but...
But in the actual book, in Genesis, it's given to one of the cherubs. Because what I just read from Genesis was the cherubs were given the flaming sword as they guarded the Garden of Eden.
Azraphale is not in Genesis. That's my question.
No.
Okay, great. Please continue.
In their 1950 journal publication, The Gates of Hell and the Guardian Angels of Paradise, which is an incredibly fucking sick title, Arvid S. Kapelrid writes, quote, the cherub's function of guarding sacred places and their mixed appearance is similar to that of the Babylonian Lamassu. It was depicted as having a human head, with the body of a bull or a lion, with eagle's wings, or the Egyptian Sphinx, which is again me interjecting, human face with the body of a lion, also related to the jackal god Anubis in its protective context, and the Hittite griffin, which was a wild card amongst the other two because this one has a human body and eagle's head and wings. However, in his visions, the prophet Ezekiel describes the cherubim as a creature much less appropriate for one's Valentine's Day card. From the book of Ezekiel, we get this earful of psychedelic imagery. Once again, opening one's Bible to Ezekiel 1:15. Here we go, Maddie, there. Yes. Thank you, Maddie. Good. Good for you. Now I'm opening my Bible. I'm sorry. My Digibible here. All right. And I look, and lo, a tempestuous wind is coming from the north. Sorry, I need to get my Ezekiel voice. And I look, and lo, a tempestuous wind is coming from the north, a great cloud and fire catching itself, and brightness to it, round about. And out of its midst as the color of copper, of the midst of the fire, and out of its midst a likeness of four living creatures, and this is their appearance. A likeness of man is to them, and four faces are to each, and four wings are to each of them, and their feet are straight feet, and the sole of their feet is the sole of a calf's foot, and they are sparkling as the color of bright brass, the hands of man under their wings, on their four sides, and their faces and their wings are to them four, joining one unto another are their wings. They turn not round in their going, each straight forward they go, into the likeness of their faces, the face of a man, and the face of a lion. Toward the right are them four, in the face of an ox, to the left are to them four, in the face of an eagle are to them four, and their faces and wings are separate from above, to each to joining together, and two covering their bodies, in each straightforward they go, whither the spirit is to go, they turn not round in their going. Into the likeness of the living creatures, their appearances are of coals of fire, burning as the appearance of lamps. It is going up and down between the living creatures, and brightness is to the fire, and out of the fire is going forth lightning, and the living creatures are running and turning back as the appearance of the flash. Share it.
Well, that made no sense at all.
No, you didn't follow that?
Nope.
Connective tissue that I find interesting here is the various mammalia, human hybrid kind of descriptions which link right back to those other Mesopotamian, Northern African guardian gods and deities that we discussed. So it's kind of just this amalgamation of all the guardians that we had been seeing in this area prior to Ezekiel's visions.
I mean, it sounded like you were just throwing out parts of animals, like in a long sequence, and also textures of things that are shiny.
Yeah, they're shining.
That's what
multi-faced,
I heard.
Multi-winged god creatures.
Yeah, little chimera things.
Mm-hmm. I would say this description shakes things up a bit. It won't be the last time that our soft boy modern sensibilities will be subverted by the fast and loose wordings of the pungent prophet Zeke's. So now we come to part two, Amalek.
And we're done with cherubs now?
Yeah, we're done with cherubs. Do you have anything you want to say about cherubs before we move on?
What is their purpose?
They're guards. Guardians.
Of what?
Heavenly spaces, generally. Usually temples or prophets themselves. They're low ranking, so they're not like the elite guard, but they're guards of area. Usually, like, most often their depictions in bas-reliefs or engravings are like on the outsides of temples, not the inner sanctums, which we'll get to later. Another character. They're the foot soldiers.
Okay. Baby little ant cherub angel things. Go ahead.
I will.
Level two.
No, actually, we're jumping up the ranks a bit. We're skipping the Bene Elohim as well as the Elohim, being sons of godly beings, quote unquote, and quote, godly beings, respectively. Thus, we now arrive at the number six spot with the Malachim. According to historyofyesterday.com, quote, the term angel comes from the... back to entomology. Hold on, so I have to give Maddie a moment because they are too excited about more entomology. The term angel comes from the Greek word angelos, which originated from the Hebrew word for messenger, malak. Sure, I got that right. The Malachim, like malak, are messengers of God and are the closest to us humans. The Malachim are the angels that spring to mind when one envisions the classic Western image of one I discussed earlier. Dude, robes, and wings. Humanoid, winged, heavenly service industry folk, the Malachim are known to deliver divine knowledge, warnings, and dox people on God's behalf. Specific service workers of God referenced in the New Testament were Malachim like Gabriel, who had the unenviable job of letting Mary know that she was pregnant with a Lord baby. Surprise!
Pregnant.
Pregnant.
Can get pregnant.
Pregart. Pregat.
She didn't notice that on her own?
No, she needed an angel.
Gotcha.
Gabe came by. He's like, hey, surprise. Hope you didn't have any...
Oops. The Virgin Mary we're talking about.
Yeah. Hope you didn't have any,
for
like...
For some reason, I was thinking Eve, which is like... No. Okay. Immaculate Conception Angel was Gabriel. I feel like we all can drive with that.
Yes. Gabriel, specifically in Islamic philosophy, is the bearer of knowledge and wisdom, is said to bring fun news to not only poor dumpy Mary, but Abraham, Zechariah, and the prophet Muhammad as well.
Why is Mary dumpy?
Just wanted to use dumpy.
Maybe you should use it for one of those other prophets.
Dumpy Zechariah, then.
Sure.
I know nothing about Zechariah. The guy's a real morb. Anywho. The story goes that Gabe squeezed the prophet Muhammad until he was able to, quote, read and learn the divine wisdom and words of God.
Sorry, he squeezed him?
He's a hugger. Yeah. Would you like me to read the
like
little passage?
Like our juice boy? Like a little juice boy for grapefruit juices?
Pass me that book over yonder, and I shall read of his squeezing.
Is it like a bear hug?
Yes.
Is it a man hug?
You get close. It's a bit of a girl hug. Ah, yeah. This is Gabriel, again, interacting with the prophet Muhammad. I mean no offense in my delivery of this. I'm reading it word for word, as it is written in the Quran. He came to him and said, read, he being Gabriel to Muhammad. He said, I cannot read. Then the prophet said, he squeezed me and squeezed me until all the strength went out of me. And then he released me and said, read. I said, I can't read. Then he said, read. in the name of thy Lord who created man of blood clot. Read. And thy Lord is the most generous, who taught by the pen, taught man that he knew not. Squeezed him. Give him a big ol' hug.
So sorry, that was a quote of the Quran from a different book that isn't the Quran.
Yes, I was reading from a book that is not the Quran, but quoting the Quran.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, in David Albert Jones's Angels, A History, the Malachim of Rabbinic Scripture, that'd be like the Torah, are specifically associated with the element fire, not unlike the jinn of Arabic and Muslim tradition.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Talmud itself states this very point, cementing their association with the mystical beings of Arabic spiritual belief. And if you think back to Ezekiel's description of the cherubim, there's a lot of fire in that one too. Very fire-heavy group, these angels.
There's also glitters and shimmers.
Oh yeah. Which might allude to something else. We will get to later.
Glittering and shimmering?
Yeah, something shiny, metallic almost. Something hard like a casing. And questions. Posing questions. You.
A sword?
Yeah.
A harp?
In her book, The Intelligent World of the Jinn, which I was just reading that Quran quote from, author Amira El-Zain writes of the Quran, in which she said that the jinn were explicitly forbidden from bearing news from heaven to earth, and therefore people, and thus the job of the messenger were given to the angels. So jinn were never supposed to, like, you know, DM you or let you know what was going on in heaven. They can fuck with you in a multitude of ways, and often did. No, but to deliver knowledge, as Gabriel did, the prophet, or to just deliver any kind of news from the heavenly realm, specifically allocated to be the work of angels. Which brings me to one other point I wanted to read from Amir al-Zain's book, which I found to be quite lovely. Ah, yes. Islamic philosophy constantly emphasizes the idea that humans should strive to return to their original, quote, angelic state. They believe it is through philosophy that humans realize the virtual characteristics of their humanness. They affirm, quote, man attains the form of humanity and progresses in the hierarchy of beings until, in crossing the straight way and the correct path, he becomes an angel. Which makes me think there is a through line for us humans to ascend this hierarchy that we have been describing today. And we ourselves may not solely become angels, but nay, one day may become God.
Blasphemy.
Indeed. And this may prove more reasonable an idea as we progress through. But I wanted to bear that in mind. Dear listener.
So you can ascend from purgatory up through the ranks of angels?
Not purgatory, no.
Well, if you're Catholic, you go to purgatory.
Our physical realm in which we live right now.
Is this not a form of purgatory?
Ooh, deep. I'll take it and I will run with it. This relationship of angels and jinn and messengers and the like is compounded further in researching the origins of the depictions of the Big Bird Malachim that we in Western Christian and Catholic faith.
Sorry, did you say Big Bird?
Yeah, I said Big Bird.
A la Sesame Street? Big Bird?
Mais oui.
So he's very yellow?
No, he's just a big man with wings.
So he's fluffy.
Yeah. Well, would you call angels fluffy?
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah, that's what I'm saying. The art historian, Ernst Kohn Wiener, got Wiener in his name, wrote of an early 15th...
I wasn't going to laugh at your face. Made it funny. Okay.
Wrote of an early 15th century painting that, quote, never before had angels as winged genii been ventured in Jewish manuscripts, end quote. Called them winged genii. At that point in time, at least, he had never seen that before. So that depiction in Jewish manuscripts happened in the early 15th century. In fact, it wasn't until Christian artistic liberty was taken in the 3rd century that the Malachim angels began rocking their bewinged look, as the angels of religious scripture are never mentioned as having sported such sick bird bits. Nowhere in the angel does it say Malachim or angels have wings. But it says some other shit. It says some other shit about who? Our next ones. The Seraphim.
Oh, the Seraphim, yeah.
A Oh, yeah.
That's the most angelic thing that I've heard that I recall, other than Tribbs, which I feel like no one really considers to be actual angels, more just like little, I don't know.
Well, that's what we've established. Yeah. Yeah, it's always
pigeons.
Been, especially as something, exactly. It's for someone that grew up outside of like a religious household, these are all questions I never knew I had. It's like, what the fuck are the cherubs? They're just low ranking. They're angels still, but I didn't realize there was a whole like pecking order to them or what they really look until today.
I feel like most people are like, okay, cherub angels, and those are the two ranks. But you're saying there was like what, 9, 10?
We're going with 10.
10.
Because Maimonides is my boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know seraphim. Mm-hmm. You know what they look like or do.
Well, they're supposed to look like people and do decision making stuff.
How wrong you are.
Well, I don't know. I didn't research it.
I ask you now, dear listeners, once again, please open your Bibles, Isaiah 6:1, and read along with me.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Reading from Isaiah 6:1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with 6 wings. With 2 wings they covered their faces, and with 2 they covered their feet, and with 2 they were flying, and they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty, and the whole world over is full of his glory." That's their song. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined, for a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people with unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar, which he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and whom will go for us?" And here I said, "Here I am, send me." He said, "Go and tell the people." We don't need to do the rest of this. And then we got a description of the seraphim, and they burned this guy's unclean lips. That guy had nasty lips. Okay. And what did they look like, Maddie?
They had 6 wings.
Yes.
Covering their faces with 2, covering their feet. 2 to fly.
Yes.
Sounds still humanoid, to be honest.
Does this bring to mind any imagery that you've seen?
I feel like there's like one with like an eye or something that has 6
wings.
But I don't know what that's.
Yes, you're closing in on it now.
Like a demon eye or something?
Kind of, sort of. The seraphim are kind of like the elite Kingsguard. They're the ones sit by the Lord's throne, defend him. They're right there in the action. And so therefore the seraphim.
So are you saying that they're more like Mike from Monsters, Inc. versus humanoid?
I am unfamiliar with this property.
You know, the green eyeball guy that has hands and feet?
I don't remember him having 6 wings.
Right, yeah. But like that, but with 6 wings. Is that what they look like?
Suppose.
Other than humans? Because they have eyes in the middle and also feet?
Sure. Sure, yeah. Throw some wings on that. It's Mike.
Mike Wazowski?
So, this description of the seraphim, with the 6 wings wrapped about their forms, 2 covering their head and face, 2 swaddling their lower half, and 2 outstretched with which to fly, reoccurs in many paintings, prints, engravings, and sculptures. Interestingly enough, here we go. Entomology. The name seraphim also has connections to the elements of... Oh, Maddie is yawning as I get into the entomology of this, huh?
Sorry, just keep going.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Okay, you don't have to comment.
Oh, but I will. Interestingly enough, the name seraphim also has connections to the elements of fire, as it is a transliteration of the original Hebrew characters from which we get the term today. Maddie, do you know what a transliteration is?
No. try to divine what that means based on context, but I don't actually know.
Scry for it. Scry for the stars and define this for me.
Transliteration?
Yes.
Like you're translating from one set of symbols to a different language, would be my guess.
That's exact. It's not an exact translation. It's a transmutation of an idea into another language for which there was no word for this thing.
Right. So, okay. So, like, when we're translating, you know, like, things in German to English.
Yeah, but those, I would say probably a better idea would be, like, something in, like, kanji, something for which there's no, like, root English alternative.
I was thinking about the literary meaning, but yeah, sure. Yeah.
Mm.
Any of those work? Really, any culture to a different language branch would work. Because they're not originating from the same thing.
All right. So, you know, keeping on with this fun train, choo-choo, here we go back into etymological station. The word seraph in Hebrew means, quote, burning, and is used 7 times in this context within the Hebrew Bible. Used as a noun, it implies serpent. Then we have the visions of Isaiah that were recently read to you, and as you read from your Bible along with me, thank you, listener, where the term is used to describe a literal creature, or I guess creature might seem a bit denigrative, a guard. The serpent-burning connection is thought to relate either to the fiery coloring on certain snakes or the burning sensation of their venom. Thoughts and questions, feelings, excitement.
Burning snakes brings to mind biblically Satan.
Yes.
In the Garden of Eden. Satan. Being engulfed in hellfire.
Oh, thank you. You actually just reminded me of the last transliteration I learned about. The word Satan. Like the literal closest thing in Hebrew would be adversary. But the transliteration is where we get Satan.
It's nice to have names for things.
Yeah, that's true. So continuing down this etymological rabbit hole, Dionysius the Areopagite, I'm guessing that's how you say it in Greek, in his Celestial Hierarchy, drew upon the Book of Isaiah in fixing the fiery nature of the seraphim in the medieval imagination, his contemporaries. With this in mind, the writer set out to cement the seraphim in association with, quote, those who kindle or make hot, going on to say, the name seraphim clearly indicates their ceaseless and eternal revolution about divine principles. Their heat and keenness, the exuberance of their intense, perpetual, tireless activity, and their elevative and energetic assimilation of it, kindling and fiery to their own heat, in wholly purifying them, burning and all-consuming flame, by the unhindered, unquenchable, changeless, radiant, and enlightening power, dispelling and destroying the shadows of darkness. Rise, Ashen One. Dark Souls 4 has begun.
Aren't you supposed to be tarnished?
That's Elden Ring, you scrub.
Oh, okay, sorry. I was convinced that they're exactly the same thing.
Actually, no, the base mythology of the protagonist in the Dark Souls series is one that has come from the eternal flame, whereas the tarnished of Elden Ring are actually more so they're offcuts of the great tree in its human form. So as you see, it's quite a different thing.
Yeah, okay. Let's just do another unrelated lore. And then we'll just go down and down and down.
How do you really feel, though, Maddie?
I feel like you know too much about Elden Ring and Dark Souls lore.
I am going to slip that in, like, more thoroughly into an upcoming episode, but we'll wait on that.
You should just do an episode on it, because you've done so much research at this point.
Lore
of Elden Ring and the lore of Dark Souls.
Don't you worry. Actually, that's... Anyway,
you should do that because someone's going to be interested.
We're still talking etymology.
Probably not me, but someone might be.
There are some links with the root word. That actually sounds fun, though, because I could do like the lore of Elden Ring and all the things that it actually relates to in real world.
Yeah, that'd you be, could that'd do be it. Tight.
Anyway, that's like a 6-parter, though. So that would go over like the course of a year. That's season three. Cool. Thank you, Maddie.
Y'all season three is of Tuckered Out as Elden Ring.
Just all Elden Ring related back to real world shit.
Because that's our whole life right now anyway. For Tucker. Little Tucker, yeah.
Not that I'm just thinking about getting married and stuff. No, it's mainly Elden Ring, yeah.
It's mostly Elden Ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
More Elden Ring than marriage.
Maddie is in a mood today. More Elden Ring than marriage.
Did I hit a nerve there?
No, I'm fine. Give me this, my entomology, and be gone with you.
Okay, please continue your deep rabbit hole. Where are we now?
Right now, we're talking about the links between the root word and the root word to Babylonian fire gods, of course.
Okay.
And also in Egypt, there are eagle lion-shaped figures, like back to the cherubim.
A sphinx?
Referred to as Sadef. Spelled differently. Still, Sadef.
Did you say eagle lion?
Eagle lion-shaped, yeah. So not quite, that's more like a griffin or a sphinx.
Yeah. I said sphinx.
You did say sphinx. Sorry, I couldn't hear you through my rage. Which is where we get our English term and concept for the griffin from.
Oh, okay. From Babylonian?
Egypt and Babylonian's from Seraph, yeah.
Okay.
Just as the cherubim can be linked to older Mesopotamia ideas of a human-animal hybrid, so can the sephirim, though more powerful. The king's guard, if you will, as I mentioned earlier.
The king's guard of God?
Yeah. One last and my personal favorite feature of the seraphim can be found in the Book of Revelation, passage 4:4, where it reads, "In the center around the throne were four living creatures, and they were covered with eyes in front and in back. The first creature was like a lion, the second was like an ox,
the third was like
had the face of a man, the fourth was like a flying eagle. Each of the four living creatures had six wings and was covered with eyes all around, even under its wings. Day and night they never stopped saying, 'Holy, holy, 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 holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come.'" That's called the Trisagion. That fun little prayer I just sang. If you'd like, I can do it again.
No, say rank three again, because I said Mike Wazowski, and so they might not have heard rank three.
Rank what?
Three.
What are you talking about, rank three?
You said 1, 2, 3, 4. What was number three?
In the first list was a creature like a lion.
Don't say the whole thing. Just
the second was like an ox. The third had the face of a man named Mike Wazowski. And fourth was a flying eagle.
Perfect.
Named Sully. Was that the other guy's name? Was it Sully?
The other guy's name was Sully, but he looked more like a little, like a big bear with horns.
He didn't land that ship in New York, or that plane in New York.
And blue fur.
That was Sully too, wasn't it?
That was also a Sully, yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Cool. Bag. It was like a niche Tom Hanks joke.
That's a deep cut, yeah.
That's a deep cut.
That's the, what was it, the locked Reddit room? Like, the true Hank of...
Yeah.
Once you've proved your knowledge, join us on the restricted chat or something like
that. You're doing the exact voice. I'm actually kind of impressed.
You don't think I've tried this voice a million times?
I don't know.
Bag. The Booty Brothers get vasectomy. Eat my ass, bitch. Splanch. All right.
Splanch is good. I can't believe it was Tom Hanks and Splash. Apparently that's where my parents got my name, and also where everyone else got the name Madison.
I got my name from that Tom Hanks classic, Tuber and Hoonis. And Captain Penis. All right.
Okay, so what rank are we on now?
Now that our brains have been primed.
After Sarah.
And we have distanced ourselves from the banal, dare I say, basic conception of what an angel is, and indeed looks like. May we begin to discuss the truly psychedelic grandness of the second-tiered angel in the Lord's hierarchy.
Okay, so we went from 6 to 2.
Yes.
In the what's-his-name's
No, list. We went from 4 to 2. 6 was the Malachim.
Oh, right. So 4 was Seraphim.
Yes.
Now we're up to 2.
Yes.
Okay.
The Ophanim.
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 Okay.
As described in Ezekiel's vision, sorry, hold on one quick moment. I have to really kill this joke, but I do need to open my Bible. Yeah.
And I see the living creatures, and lo, one wheel is in the earth near the living creatures, as its four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their works is the color of beryl, and one likeness is to them four, and their appearance and their works as if it were the wheel in the midst of a wheel on their four sides. In their going, they go, and they not round in their going. Sorry, turn not round in their going.
They're not round in their going.
Yes. As to their rings, I know you are asking about their rings. They are both high and fearful, and their rings are full of eyes round about them four. And in the going of the living creatures, the wheels go beside them. And in the living creatures being lifted up off the earth, lifted up are the wheels. Whither the spirit is to go, they go. Thither the spirit is to go, and the wheels are lifted up against them, for a living spirit is in the wheels. In their going they go, and in their standing they stand. And in their being lifted up off the earth, lifted are the wheels over against them, for a living spirit is in the wheels.
Okay, so are they driving a chariot?
Free
like
delivery under 30 minutes.
Are they actual wheels?
What does that sound like to you?
I'm unclear.
Yeah, you're unclear on that one?
Based on that reading, were you describing what they look like, or like the concept of the rink? Like, what exactly were you trying to describe?
An interesting question. Yes, indeed. What do you think Ezekiel was describing or seeing there?
Something with wheels lifting into heaven.
What if I was to say that this is the face of God's angel?
Okay, so it's like rotating wheels a la the ring. And
gyroscopic
like,
living yeah, gyroscope. Body aura.
Okay, so it's a gyroscope. Okay, of so the angel itself
horror.
Is a gyroscope of wheels.
Of
with
horror.
Lots of eyes. With a thingy in the middle.
Yes.
Okay.
Dear listener, think that fun, like I guess you would call it the sun in the Game of Thrones opening sequence. The theme music is blaring. You're all excited to see your favorite Jon Snow Snow. And it's got that burning sun. And it's got,
I don't
instead
want
of,
it.
Instead of the house sigils rotating around the sun, it's human eyes. And it's sent from God. And it's showing up to you. You're just a little dirty.
It's also in several Marvel properties. There, in Vision Doctor Wizard. Strange stuff, they're always throwing little gyroscopes around. Mm-hmm. Like little swirly.
Is my co-host things. Is my co-host making connections?
Little fidget toy stuff. It's also like those fidget toys that turn over themselves.
Yes. On their own, you say. Almost like they have an intelligence. Or is it more akin to something from a collective unconsciousness? Something like, as we discussed last weekend, an archetype. Something within each of us that we all relate to.
A gyroscope?
Yeah.
You have a nice little gyroscope. What color is your gyroscope? In your soul.
9.
Your color is 9?
I'm on a different level than you now. I think in numbers.
Well, I think we just lost, like, anyone that was even still listening at this point.
Yes. Well, if we didn't then, we're sure about to.
Oh, great.
Because here we turn a page into, well, I know we've all expected we were going to get to. You know where I'm at?
I don't know, the ones that fell from heaven to be interesting?
No, these interlocking body horror biomachines that we called the Ophanim have aroused many a conspiratorial thoughts amongst modern thinkers. Sadly, many of these thoughts have led me to watch episodes of Ancient Aliens in the process of researching this week's episode.
No, that's
something
right.
that I would
We're
not wish
now.
Upon my greatest
Jesus
enemies.
Jesus Christ, they're so bad.
Here we
so,
go,
so
baby.
Stupid.
Rather than subjecting you to any sound bites from that, because
Please
not only
no.
would I not, but secondly, instead I have something else for you.
Other than a sound bite?
There was one publication that I read which contained some powerful, fully rational and well-articulated ideas on the concept of Ezekiel's vision, being one of an encounter with a UFO.
I know what I'm thinking of. The Marvel thing, the dying star forge that Thor had to restart in Ragnarok for his hammer.
That
not
was
Ragnarok,
Infinity War.
In Infinity War. That
God
was
damn.
That's also what the Orifim people looked like.
Yeah,
that dying star gyroscope situation.
Totally. I'm just upset with my reaction. Was large? Right there. Yeah, no, that's great.
Other than the fact that his presence is kind of unquestionably amazing, but he's actually physically very tall.
Yes.
In that one.
Nephilim. Ooh, I'm teasing. Tucky tease. So, the former NASA employee and author, Joseph F. Blumrich,
writes... Did he quit or was he let go?
Probably let go, given what we're about to get into.
Okay.
Writes in his article, The Spaceships of the Prophet Ezekiel, from the publication... Hold, please. Impact of Science on Society.
Oh, okay. So it's not actual science.
Oh.
It's the impact
He was
science.
An aeronautical engineer.
He was. And then he started spouting all of his fucking alien shit in the conference room. And they're like, okay, so, maybe we need to let this guy go.
So his initial, this initial bit that I'm going to read to you comes after he had first read, fuck, I forgot the author. It's that famous, it's the basis for all ancient alien belief. It's a book called The Chariot of the Gods, which... Like the show that I would
say. I thought you were going to say War of the Worlds.
No, that's science fiction. We're talking about real shit right now, Maddie. Chariot of the Gods.
I'm pretty
is
sure
like,
War of the Worlds was like the beginning of all the alien films, was it not?
What is it? Is it a radio broadcast?
Right. Films. Films, I'm saying.
I know, but we're not talking about films.
No, but we're talking about aliens. So I was bringing up an alien film.
So anyway, this guy, Joseph Blumrich, had been reading Chariots of the Gods, which is essentially the proto-ancient aliens. The pyramids were built by other life forms.
Uh-huh.
Stonehenge is a portal, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah,
and he had
know.
Read that, and he decided that he was going to go through that book and disprove that, which I'm, once again, sorry, can't remember the name of Chariot of the Gods, but this... disprove that person's assertion that Ezekiel's visions were that of a UFO. Joseph writes, by the time I had got to verse 7 of the very first chapter, however, I found myself interpreting a description of the landing legs of some kind of flying vehicle. Quoting Ezekiel again, their legs were straight, and the soles of their feet were round, and they sparkled like burnished bronze, end quote.
What?
That was that thing I read to you for the cherubim.
Okay.
Having designed and tested such structures myself, this is Joseph speaking, I could not deny that it was possible to read this in a direct, yet simple, technical description. The contrast of that evidently clear passage with the quite hazy picture sketched by the rest of the chapter made me realize that the prophet could not have known what it was he had seen, or could not have understood it. I realized then the necessary consequences of this. The prophet could not describe his encounters with space vehicles and their crews in the terms available to him, with words and comparisons familiar to him and his contemporaries. Continuing on, and stating that Ezekiel was viewing the craft from a distance of 1,000 meters, a number and assumption that for the life of me, I can't figure out where he gets it, he just suddenly throwing that one out
well,
there.
Well, so he said in terms familiar to him.
Yes.
But Ezekiel did not grow up in the time of spacecraft.
That's
therefore,
exactly his
he
point.
Would not have the description of a NASA engineer upon writing the thing.
Exactly. That's the whole point he's making, is that that's why this sounds so weird and whimsical, but it actually makes quite a lot of sense when you inject modern words and descriptions of things that we have a reference for into his descriptions. It becomes something so blatantly clear and obvious as to be a craft, which...
So by changing words...
By inserting modern words, yes. Here we go. Quote, in these fiery dynamics...
Inserting things is not translating. They know that, right? Inserting random words is not translating a script.
It's not random. He's a trained aeronautical engineer.
Right.
In these fiery, dynamic surroundings, Ezekiel notices the moving rotors, sees the landing legs and mechanical arms attached to the helicopter units. This guy's focus was helicopters, so he puts a lot of helicopters into this. His first reaction is to compare the helicopters with man-like figures, but he then finds in the term, quote, living creatures, end quote, an expression of admirable vagueness to reflect his uncertainty. During final descent and landing, Ezekiel observes the protective covers of the helicopter's gear mechanisms, which he's able to describe best by comparing them with human faces, the eyes within wheels, Maddie, the eyes within wheels. He notices the red-hot radiator glowing coals covering part of the lower central body. The prophet is fascinated by the wheels, which, in their basic form, are the only element he recognizes and thus describes in greater detail. Here, Yosef.
So, here's a question.
Go ahead.
If you were going to describe a ship, but you didn't have the word for ship, like an airship or like a plane.
And I'd never possibly conceived of anything like that.
Wouldn't you then compare it to something like a rock or like some sort of round or like a bowl or something like that, like an object versus
living
human
creatures?
Yeah.
But if it's exuding an energy, which at that point I'd never seen before,
like a frog or a bird.
But if it's moving in a way that feels more organic in nature, I would probably attribute more like biological attributes to it. If you've never seen a man-made object fly through the sky, you're going to more closely associate that with a bird or something of natural origin than a construction. I would pause. This is my own. You're right. I agree with you.
I did say bird.
I know, but you said rock before bird.
If it's made of metal, you're like,
what is metal?
Well, you know what metal is. This is like past the Bronze Age.
Yeah.
So
it's
you know
six,
what metal
it's six,
is. 570. There are swords and other such things.
Anyway, Maddie, here's a image of the doctor's prototype that he created of Ezekiel's spaceship.
None of those have rotating wheels.
Oh, which brings us to our next point. Here is his government-approved patent for the wheels within wheels. See, this is one big wheel, and then it has little wheels all upon the side. Operate in any direction and independently. He calls this his omnidirectional wheel, and actually, Maddie, in a twist of fate, it ties back into a conversation we were having not but 5 hours earlier about how so often in America specifically, money and funding and technology goes to things that are terrible and are more often weaponized than used to help communities. But here I would point out that the patent or Yosef's omnidirectional wheel, he described it delightfully and refreshingly as something that could be applied and used specifically to the advancement of mobility in wheelchairs. How do you feel about that? Much, much thinking and consternation upon Maddie's face. They appear conflicted.
I feel conflicted.
Yes, yes.
I feel like the wheel that I just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Is not user-friendly.
No, it looks quite dangerous.
So, like, if you had told me something like, this is for, like, thrill-seekers, they go down a mountain on this wheel thing, then I'd be like, cool.
Hurt yourself, go for it.
Because there doesn't seem to be any way to control it.
Nah.
And it would be really difficult.
I mean, he did
to stop something that's going omnidirectional.
I am no engineer, but, yeah, I can't make heads or tails of what I'm seeing, really.
So I feel like that was sort of like a self, I'm being useful kind of signal. Because that don't look like it could be on the side of a wheelchair or anywhere near a chair, to be honest.
Well, now let's move on to another point from Bloomerick, in which he describes Ezekiel's numerous and multiple abductions. You know how we started this episode off as saying that in his 30th year, he obtained his first vision, these visions lasted for 22 years?
Yeah.
Bloomrick asserts his visions were just multiple times he was taken to space by aliens. Bloomrick writes, Ezekiel tells us later that he was picked up aboard the spacecraft near Tel Aviv, where he lived and was later returned there. He has little recollection of the flight itself. Completely overcome by the experience, he flies, quote, in bitterness, in the heat of my spirit, which comes from chapter 3 of Ezekiel, end quote. The second encounter follows within a few months. Its description is brief and fragmentary, in chapter 3 again. In his account of the third experience, 1 year after the first, Ezekiel narrates a fascinating event, culminating in what seems to be a maintenance or repair operation of the spacecraft. A mechanical arm, figure 5, he has a drawing of it. It's a stupid arm. It's a stupid robot arm. It looks like Bender's arm from Futurama. Mechanical arm reaches from a helicopter unit, once again helicopters, toward the red hot area at the lower tip of the main body. So you heard that, right? You get, he is doing repairs on a ship, and a robot arm just reaches out to him and then goes back into the ship. Would you like to hear from what Dr. Joseph Limerick gleaned that reading? In our book club, you don't. Maddie's shaking their head.
I don't think we need to.
I think we're gonna, because it just goes, it's good.
The reading from Ezekiel. About the robot.
And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, on the fifth day of the month, as I sat in my house with the elders of Judah, sitting before me, and the hand of the Lord God fell upon me there. Then I looked, and there was a likeness, like the appearance of fire, from the appearance of his waist and downward, fire. And from his waist and upward, like the appearance of brightness, like the color of amber. Amber is the color of my energy. Ooh. He stretched out the form of a hand and took me up by a lock of hair. And the spirit lifted me up between heaven and earth and brought me in visions of God to Jerusalem. That sounds like abduction, right? That all sounds like, you know, a metal arm.
Did you just insert a song there?
I did insert 311 into that, yes.
All right. Okay. Just making sure. Because I feel like you did that again. Like the last two times that you've quoted something, you're just inserting random pop culture
references. I am, as we go, because I'm trying to, Ezekiel, once again, Blumick writing, Ezekiel was surely a man of high intelligence, gifted with rare powers of observation. He had the incredible ability to keep his intellect unimpaired by the emotional turmoil caused by the first encounter. He was in a condition of shock by the time he observed the commander of the vessel. Ezekiel wrote that it took him 7 days to recover from the experience. One could therefore expect him to say that he had seen God, and that God spoke to him. Yeah, he compared the figure of the commander to that of Adam, or man, and very soberly says, "One spoke to me." Never in all of his encounters with the commander and other members of the crew does he show any reverence. Essentially, he met the B-team, the author puts forward, the advanced expeditionary crew, the hourly aliens, the people for whom you wish to speak to their manager. Seeing that they were undoubtedly of a lower tier, this angelic ranking thus does spring forth.
Uh-huh.
That was me thinking that's the case. It's showing they're just people. They're man like Elohim. First one.
Okay. So
you're not blown away by that? Fine. Ultimately, Joseph ends his article with an urgent appeal to the greater scientific community, writing, "What is needed foremost is open-minded cooperation. I plead for that."
Cooperation for what purpose?
Finding out why, when, and where aliens visited us in ancient times.
Because of the biblical prophet. Because
obviously aliens showed up. He was able to recreate fully the ship that Ezekiel saw, because he is a, as he states over and over, he's an engineer. And engineers have not tackled the alien question. So he's saying if more people from the scientific community come together and work together, rather than just nerds, solve this. We'll crack this nut.
Shouldn't they be working on, like,
yes,
things to save climate change and, yes, possibly, like,
anything
people
else
going into space in order to revive the planet?
What if the people from space can solve climate change?
What?
What if the people from space can solve climate change?
Why would they do that?
Their greater brain.
No.
Greater knowledge.
But, like, why would they try to save our planet?
One final point to touch on, since we do have time permitting, were those who were born of the commingling of man and gods, the giants, the Nephilim.
Wait, sorry, are we on another rank of angels now?
The Nephilim aren't included within the 10 ranking system of Manimedes.
So we did
Cherubim, number 8.
Number 8, number 6, number 4.
And 2.
And 2.
Yes.
We're not doing number 1?
No, that's God.
God's number one.
Yeah.
So two. Okay. So the one we just did was two. Mm-hmm. The humanoid-ish ones.
Yeah.
Just like dudes.
Yeah, the first one? Ishim?
I don't know. Was the ones for rank two, what did they look like again?
Oh, it's the Ophanim. The wheels within wheels. of eyes.
That's right, too.
Yes.
Okay.
So.
And Seraphim are eyes with six wings.
Mm.
And the fourth
Malachim.
One. Malachim.
Just messengers.
Messengers that are humanoid looking?
Humanoid messengers, yes. Probably more akin to the gray.
And eight are the cupid thingies.
Yeah. Human-animal hybrid.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm just summarizing for our listeners so we know where we are in the world. So then we're moving away from the ranking system.
The fallen gods.
And we're done with angel ranks.
Well, they're not officially ranked because they're naughty a little bit. They're not being around. They're kind of like, ooh, what do we do with these guys? Who are they? Because they're alien human hybrids. And they're the fallen gods, the Nephilim.
Wait, so why are we talking about them right now?
Because they're great. Here we are. Referenced in Genesis, quote, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went in to the daughters of humans, who bore children to them. Mm-hmm. These were the heroes that were of old, warriors of renown.
So they were gods?
They were gods that mated with people.
But to make demigods?
Not demi, sons of God, which could be the Ishim, the 10th ranking.
Okay.
But they have a bit of a different trait. Ancient alien theorists suggest the Nephilim not only prove the existence of giants of folklore, but are additionally irrefutable proof of Martians having come to Earth in prehistory to morph all over us and create the divine beings which spearheaded our earliest technological advancements. Where else could we have gotten our great knowledge and our power if not from Martians?
I mean, it could be from, like, motivation to starve less quickly.
Absolutely silly. You are a silly person. Mention again in Numbers from the Bible, the Nephilim stature is described as thus by the Israelites. Mm-hmm. Quote, the land that we have gone through as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great size. There we saw the Nephilim, the Anakites from Nephilim, and to ourselves we seem like grasshoppers, and so we seem to them. Some take this as an obvious allusion to their alien heritage, arguing that they would have indeed been larger in stature than most humans, as their Martian ancestors would have undoubtedly been taller given the low gravity of their home planet. That's what they're commingling. Giants.
I thought you said they were like grasshoppers. So
no, the speaker, the Israelites, the speaker who saw them, felt as grasshoppers.
Hmm.
And then I finish with this. I very much enjoy this passage from the Encyclopedia Britannica, which states that it would be, quote, theologically problematic to suggest that angels or demons as purely spiritual beings could physically reproduce with humans, end quote. I just like that they called it problematic.
What, they said that in the dictionary?
Yeah.
For which word?
Nephilim.
Oh. But that's what that's in the description there?
Yeah.
Weird things that mate with humans.
Yeah, it's problematic, theologically speaking.
Which dictionary?
Encyclopedia Britannica.
Oh, the encyclopedia.
Yes.
Not the dictionary.
Now we come to my epilogue. In the process of researching today's episode, I came across the writing of the person that I've mentioned a few times, the Sephardic Jewish philosopher Maimonides, sometimes referred to by the name Ramban, who, among other endeavors, was one of the most prolific and influential, Torah scholars of the medieval period.
Hmm.
In his seminal work, The Guide for the Perplexed, which seems like it's a term for a book out of Beetlejuice, I love it, published in the early 12th century, Maimonides sought to rectify rabbinical theology with objective reasoning and rational investigation. On the topic of angels, the scholar wrote, "For all forces are angels. How blind, how perniciously blind are the naive. If you told someone who purports to be a sage of Israel that the deity sends an angel to enter a woman's womb and there forms an embryo, he would think this a miracle and accept it as a mark of the majesty and the power of the deity, despite the fact that he believes an angel to be a body of fire one-third the size of the entire world. All this, he thinks, is possible for God. But if you tell him that God placed the sperm of the power of forming and demarcating these organs, and that this is the angel, or that all forms are produced by this active intellect, that here is the angel, the vice-regent of the world, constantly mentioned by the sages, then he will recoil, For he, the naive person, does not understand that the true majesty and power are in the bringing into being of forces which are active in a thing, although they cannot be perceived by the senses. Thus the sages reveal to the aware that their imaginative faculty is also called an angel, and that the mind is called a cherub. How beautiful this will appear to the sophisticated mind, and how disturbing to the primitive. I like him.
Yeah, it's really hard to understand what he's trying to say there.
He's trying to say that it's naive to believe in divinity and that science is going to ultimately win out, even though he was a theologist.
He's
saying that when you present scientific proof to true believers, they get upset and say, that's silly, no matter the evidence, because of their faith. I like this quote a lot because it brought me back to middle school when I first started getting really into just like that kind of thinking.
Oh, yeah, the well actually thing that all middle schools engage in.
Like, yeah, where it's like, I'm an atheist.
I know things. I'm in middle school now.
I'm an atheist now. Yeah, that's my tuckered out.
Okay, so it was kaleidoscopic, psychedelic, enthusiastic, full of a full happy cast of full cast audio characters.
And half bullshit.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty Tucker adjacent.
I would say it's right on the Tucker.
Right on the Tuck.
Yeah. Firmly embedded in the Tuck meat.
I wonder if someone will hire you to do a full reading of the Bible.
I sure as hell hope not. I don't want to do that.
Well, maybe, okay, what about the youth Bible, where they cut it down?
No. God damn, Maddie.
A bridge.
Do you
version.
Live in the world that I do? I'm not going to accept money for fucking.
Well, but it would be really interesting. Like, the most interested I've been in a Bible passage is with you reading it like that.
And yet you still look like you're about to fall asleep. One, proving that I'm good and true to my word when I say this is time for being tuckered out. But two, showing that no matter how engaged you can be with listening to someone talk Bible shit, you'll still pass out.
You gotta take it in small segments. That's why they only take little small bitsies for the services, you know?
Just little bites of Christ.
Little bites.
Little teeny bites.
If
that's your Eucharist.
The whole passage, you're like, what?
Yeah, if they gave you that full Eucharist, you would. That whole cracker? No, you wouldn't make it.
Mm-mm.
That's why you just get tiny bites.
Little bites are more digestible.
Little tiny bites of Christ. Cool. Well, thank you all for joining us. This has been fun for me. Hope it's been fun for you. I got some more about, and I had fun.
And what is our Instagram?
Better figure it out yourself, dear listener. It's a ADD Storyteller.
No.
It's not.
ADD Storytelling Podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. You're in charge of the Instagram.
Our email is addstoryteller@gmail.com.
That's our email. You can email us anything. Any opinions, any fun Bible passages that you really like, you can send those to us. Also, you can follow us on Instagram, ADD Storytelling Podcast, like I just said. You can follow us on TikTok at ADD_storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on Spotify.
On the street, if
Apple.
You'd like.
You can
if you find us out in the world, feel free to just follow me. Keep a frightening distance, so I'm never sure if you're there.
You can support our podcast at anchor.fm/ADD Storyteller if you want to subscribe and give us too many, or you could just send it, tell your friends, and talk about stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you all. Appreciate you as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.